One of my favorite verses in the Bible is this one, 1 Corinthians 11:1, where Paul writes, "Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ." That's my desire, to be able to say that. And that's my desire for this church, that we can tell people, follow our example as we follow the example of Jesus. That we would be loving like Jesus loved, would be teaching what Jesus taught, would be obeying like Jesus obeyed. That's some of what Jesus called us to in John 13-17, as he's talking to his disciples the night before he's going to be crucified. He tells them, look, I've served you. I've set an example for you that you will do what I've done for you. He says, here's my new command, love each other as I have loved you, that we are supposed to follow in that. And he says, the things you've seen me do, you'll do. In fact, even greater things you're going to be doing. He's saying, here's my example, now go out and live that way. And so as a church, we've been looking at how do we do that? And one example of that in the Bible is the man named Paul, or the Apostle Paul, because he says, well, I've been doing that. I'm following the example of Jesus, now follow my example. So we've been looking at some of the relationships that he had, some of the friendships that he had that we're calling discipling relationships, where these are people in Paul's life that helped him live more like Jesus, and then he was helping them to live out that example more like Jesus, and hopefully seeing how we can do that as well. So today we're going to be looking at the example of the friendship between Luke and Paul. And hopefully, as we've been looking at the Bible and looking at these things, you do see that these are, so much of the Bible was written out of friendship and was written out of relationships. It wasn't just a guy who sat off by himself writing something, this is what you should do, you must do this, you must do this. Instead, it's stories of people who knew each other and are talking and are sharing that with one another, and it's people that they knew intimately, that they're writing letters to them to encourage them to live and follow the example of Christ. And Paul and Luke are some of those. So let's start with this. Who was Luke? There's not a whole lot about him in the Bible. There's only three verses that mention his name, even though we know that he wrote what ended up being a lot of the New Testament. There's only three verses that say his name. So first, we know that his name is Luke. That would have been from either a Greek or a Latin background. So he didn't have a Hebrew name as far as we know. He is likely the only person to write in the New Testament that was not a Jewish person. He was probably some sort of Gentile, maybe Greek, but could be something else. And we know the job that he had. He was a doctor or a physician, which is interesting. We know it simply because in Colossians 4:14, Paul writes that, our friend Luke, the doctor, and Demas send greetings. And even there, you see sort of the difference, right? Demas, we have no idea what job he did. Luke, the doctor, Demas, that other guy. And Paul mentions like 40 or more different people in his letters, and very rarely does he say what kind of job they had. He does mention Enzenas, the lawyer, which that one kind of made sense because he was in some legal trouble at the time. So he says, hey, help Enzenas, the lawyer, along his way. And he mentions Luke, who's the doctor. The reason why it seems like he would have said that is Paul probably met Luke when he was physically ill. The reason why I say that is because the time where it seems like he first steps into the Bible is in Acts chapter 16. Paul is on this tour as he's going around sharing the gospel. And up until this point, Luke, who was the writer of the book of Acts, is saying, well, Peter did this and this and this, and Paul did this and this and this. But only in Acts 16, he starts saying, and we started traveling to this place and that place. So it seems like this is the moment where Paul and Luke meet, that we start traveling together. And that was in the area of what's today modern Turkey, but Galatia and Phrygia were the places at that time. And later, Paul, when he's writing to people who live in that area, he says, you know, the first time I preached the gospel to you was because of an illness that I had. So it seems likely, if this is the time that he's writing about, Paul is in this area of Galatia, Paul is sick, and Paul meets a doctor. Do you think it's a coincidence?
Paul might have been one of the first medical missionaries that there was, if nothing else, being a medical doctor to the missionary. And so it would make sense then that later in Colossians, which Colossae was in Phrygia, that he makes this allusion to his profession and says this guy was a doctor. So Luke seems to join Paul there. He travels over to Philippi, and then Paul leaves him in Philippi for a while. Paul travels around, and then it seems about 6 years later that he rejoins Paul and goes down to Jerusalem with him. And then the second map slide, after they've gone down to Jerusalem, later Paul is taken into custody. He's arrested and he's put on trial, and eventually makes this long trip all the way over to Rome. And it seems like Luke is with him, if not from Jerusalem, at least from Caesarea, all the way across. All that to show they traveled a long way together, especially at that time. In previous weeks, we've talked about Timothy and John Mark and how the Apostle Paul probably knew them for 15, maybe up to 20 years or so. With Luke, it's only about a decade that it seems like they've known each other. But 10 years, you get to know a guy, right? How many of you have had a friend for at least 10 years or more? They're like, you know, friend, do you feel like you have some, you know them a little bit? That's the sort of situation that we have there. And by the time that Paul gets to Rome and he's in captivity, he's later writing to Timothy and says to him, Timothy, hey, could you come get to me quick? Because Demas, he ran away. Other people I've sent off. And only Luke is with me. Luke was that kind of friend that at least in that moment, he's the only one around who's actually there in person. And as he was a doctor, I think he saw plenty of the struggles and the scars in Paul's life. And here would be my question. Do you have a friend to whom you can show your scars? Paul had very literal ones. We're told that he was whipped at least 5 times, that he was beaten with rods 3 times, that he was shipwrecked another 3 times, which, if you've ever been through a shipwreck, there's a good chance you might have a few scars from that. He was stoned at least 1 time, and that doesn't include a time or two when he says, I had an illness or I wasn't feeling well. It would probably make sense that at some point Luke would say, Paul, take off your shirt. Let me look at those wounds. Let me see how they're doing. Is there something going on there? Oh, I forgot to mention, Paul was also bitten by a snake one time as well. Luke is the doctor who's with him, who seems to have comforted him and helped take care of him, at least at certain points. Now, that doesn't mean that Paul didn't believe in miracles. He most certainly did. When they're on that trip to Rome, they stop in Malta, and he gets bitten by a snake. And all of the people from the island are like, man, God must hate you, because you just got bitten by a snake, you're probably going to die. They knew the snake, it was a poisonous one. And Paul's just like, whatever, whoop, throws it off into the fire, keeps walking, and he doesn't die. And you're like, wow, this guy's amazing. And so they take him to the head of the island, his chief officer there, and his father is sick. And so Paul prays for this chief officer's dad, and he gets healed. Paul, at another time, there was a young guy who falls out of a roof or falls out of a window. He's dead. Paul goes down, lays his hand on him. The guy comes back to life, and Paul gets back to doing his preaching thing. Paul believes in miracles. He has seen miracles happen. But he's also had a doctor traveling along with him. And there were times when God would do some miracles for some circumstances, and he didn't see miracles in other ones. It said there'd been this moment when he was in Philippi together. So Paul and Luke, as well as Silas and Timothy, they go to Philippi. Paul and Silas get thrown in jail. They get beaten and whipped. And then they're put in the middle of the jail in the stocks, and they're praising God. We're told at midnight they're praising God. They're not, like, crying and complaining to God, nor are they even praying, like, God, heal us, heal us, heal us. They're just praising God. And then there's this like earthquake that comes and they're set free and they're loosed and God has done a miracle. And then the guy who's the prison guard, the warden, he runs in and Paul says, hey, it's okay, we're all still here. The guy's like, what do I have to do to be saved? And so he takes Paul and Silas to his home, and we're told that Paul and Silas are preaching this truth of who Jesus is to this man, and he's cleaning their wounds. They're in jail. God does this miracle to get them out of jail, and yet God doesn't do a miracle to completely take all of their wounds away. And even while they're preaching the gospel to this man about this great God, he's cleaning their wounds. Yes, we believe God does miracles. And yet, there are times when, even as we are going out together, even as we are praising God together, even as we are telling other people about Jesus together, we're also there to be together to help clean each other's wounds, to help each other heal from some of the scars that we have from life. That doesn't mean that we don't work together towards this work of praising God and telling other people about it. It's both are together. We're finding healing for ourselves even as we're telling other people about the healing and forgiveness that there's found in Jesus. And sometimes it is very appropriate to have someone who is a professional, just like Luke was a professional doctor. Yes, my wife is a doctor. This is not a shameless plug for doctors, but sometimes it is appropriate. Maybe that's with a physical thing and you need a physical doctor. Sometimes there's emotional scars or mental scars, and seeking professional help and counselors is not a bad thing, just like Paul had a professional doctor. But needing help from other people is part of the discipleship process. It's part of being like Jesus. Sometimes we think, Jesus was God, Jesus was perfect, Jesus had no problems. But he still came as a baby. That's one of the things we recognize. And babies need help. But not just in the incarnation, but in his crucifixion. Jesus is walking toward the hill where he'll be crucified, and he can't carry the cross on his own, and they have to get some stranger to carry the cross for him. Jesus needed help from other people, even as he is fulfilling the mission that God has sent him on. So following Jesus and knowing Jesus will include showing your weakness to other people. Just will. And if I may say as a side note, having someone you can show your scars to, I would say in a very personal sort of sense. Because sometimes it's so easy to like write it on a blog instead, or to put it in your Facebook status and be like, oh, I told everybody about what's going on in my life. It can be really easy in some ways for me to share it in a sermon and tell, oh, this is the stuff that's going on in my life. But there's something different about having someone there with you. Just like Paul wrote to Timothy, Luke is with me. He's the only one who's actually physically present. It can be really good to have someone in person to talk to. But even him being together with them included they were going together. They were traveling together. And it's interesting. Luke, the doctor. All kinds of people can go. Maybe you haven't been around our church very much to know, but we are very excited about helping to send people throughout the world going together to tell other people about Jesus. And maybe you think, well, I have to have some Bible degree to do that. Luke is just a doctor. And he's part of this help of going around the world. Luke is a guy who's taking care of a man who is sick at times. And that's part of being a blessing to the world of missions. So anybody can go. The second question I would ask is this. Do you have a friend who will pass on your legacy? Because that's another part of what Luke did. And this is a legacy of following Jesus. Last week, some of you heard Jessica share about her mother and share a eulogy that she had given at her mother's burial. And that was a really good example, I felt, of someone being able to talk about, this is the legacy that has been passed on from someone who has loved Jesus and lived for him, someone who loves the Word of God, someone who loves to invest in people. Do you have a friend who will pass on your legacy? Here's been a thing that's just been blowing my mind this week as I considered it. So Luke is apparently the one Gentile writer of the Bible, or in the New Testament at least. And what we don't often realize is he wrote more in the New Testament than any other author did. Paul had a couple more books, but in terms of just words out there, Luke wrote 27% of the New Testament, and Paul was only 23%. Have you ever considered the fact that a doctor wrote as much or more of the New Testament as anyone? It wasn't the apostles, it wasn't Peter, it wasn't Paul, it wasn't John. It was a guy who didn't have the right background, who didn't have this great, awesome job that we're told he's a spiritual man. He's just someone who is a friend, someone who worked alongside Paul and was able to share that story. And as I started looking, if Luke had never been a part of the picture, if Paul and Luke had never become friends, so you take out Luke, that means you take out the Gospel of Luke that we have, this biography of Jesus, you take out the book, the Acts of the Apostles, if those just didn't exist in the Bible because that relationship wasn't there, it's amazing what we would be missing. And around Christmas time, we would miss the birth of John the Baptist. That's not mentioned in any of the others. There are various things of the birth of Jesus that aren't mentioned in any of the others. Like, everyone knows the nice story of the shepherds out in the field and the angels speaking to them and the shepherds are excited. Yeah, that wouldn't be in the Bible. Well, some of the parables, some of the greatest parables that we love, like the story of the Good Samaritan, would just not be in the Bible if there hadn't been Paul and Luke's relationship. Or the story of a prodigal, of a father who has two sons that he so wants to be in his house and so wants to be a part of this party that he's throwing that he won't let their shame or their pride, he won't let their legalism or their faults and their mistakes be what keeps them away from him inviting them into his house. That picture of God as a father. And we would just not have that. We would be missing the story of 10 lepers that are healed and one Gentile comes back and thanks Jesus for it. We'd be missing the story of Jesus at the house of Mary and Martha. And Martha is really busy trying to get everything done and saying, Jesus, why isn't my sister helping? But Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus. And Jesus says, no, she's chosen the good and right thing to do. We wouldn't have that in the Bible. It just wouldn't be there. The story of Zacchaeus, this man who is all the money that he could want but is despised by society until Jesus says, I'm going to your house today. And the man finds forgiveness and a man finds worth, not in his money, but in his existence and in his identity as a child of God and specifically a child of Abraham. We would miss out on the story during the crucifixion of one thief who has whittled his life away, that's dying next to Jesus, and in his dying day looks at him and says, Jesus, you don't deserve this. I do. Remember me when you come to your kingdom. And that thief finding forgiveness. We'd be missing that great story. We miss Jesus using words from Psalm 22 saying, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. That as he's dying on the cross, we know that he realized that God was still in control. We'd miss two guys on the road to Emmaus that aren't even thinking about the fact that Jesus could have resurrected until Jesus shows up and reveals himself to them as he breaks bread with them. And that's not to mention the book of Acts that we would totally be missing. Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit comes down on people and there are thousands that get saved and God is at work and the church is growing every day. We just wouldn't have that historical record. We wouldn't have had the story of Saul, who's later called Paul, that as he's on the road to Damascus, gets knocked off of his horse by a blinding light and then finds that Jesus, this person he's been persecuting, is actually real and alive. If there had been no Luke to write, I have no idea what our church would be named. It wouldn't be Damascus Road anymore. As well as many other things we would have missed. Do you have someone who will pass along that legacy? Now, here's a really cool thing that I like about that picture. Luke, he wrote the Gospel of Luke as well as the book of Acts, right? So he starts with the example of Jesus and then gets on to the example of Paul. What did Paul say? Follow my example as I follow the example of Jesus. So Luke even put Jesus first, but then said, here's the example afterward for us to be able to follow. I've tried to give examples of people in my life that have been sort of like these various characters we've looked at, Timothy and John Mark and Barnabas and Silas. And so here are some people who are sort of like Luke's in my life, mostly from the part of being able to see the scars and people who have shared some of those difficult moments with me in my life. That's me with my college roommate, Aaron Metzger. He was sitting in the room with me when I received an email that the man who I highly admired and was my mentor had been pretty much fired from his job and was no longer going to be working at the church that I grew up in. He was the one that called me to tell me that one of our friends had committed suicide. And I was thousands of miles away on an island and couldn't be there, but we could at least talk and pray together. He was the one who was there not too long after I got handcuffed for the first time in my life and got in trouble with the law. He was the one who was there when I found out that the most expensive thing I owned in life apart from my car had been stolen. It was my computer at the time. He saw how I reacted to a felony offense being done against me. As guys in that young age, I mean, we saw the various times that we'd share the excitement of, oh, we met this girl, and maybe this is the one that God has for us to be our wife, and then saw the frustration and the disappointment when that wasn't always the case. And then he was the one who was able to rejoice with me when I found Christine, and the one who's now my wife, and I got to rejoice with him and get to be at his wedding. He was one of the first people I told after Christine and I had a miscarriage. And he got to see those scars. And then he was one of the ones who told me about the same thing that happened for he and his wife. But then we were able to rejoice together. He was glad when David got to be born. And I was rejoicing when his twin daughters were born. He's been someone who's been like a Luke that has seen many of those scars, has seen the ups, has seen the downs, and has been a good friend. A girl named Sarah Wegner. This photo was taken 7 years ago on the first day that I moved to the Netherlands. She came over and we were co-workers together at a school when I was first here. And we were sort of like the middle management in the school. We had students and I took care of the boys and she took care of the girls. And then we had people above us. And the first year sometimes felt like a battle zone. And she was there as we went through the difficulties that we had with students, the difficulties we sometimes had with leadership above us, the difficulties we had with the bureaucratic systems of things. And she was the one who maybe helped push this point forward for me of being willing to show my weakness to others. After a conversation one night, I'd shared that I'd been reading this book and it was causing me to rethink or maybe even doubt some of the ways that I had learned about the Bible and some of the history in the Bible. And so I'm sharing just some of these concerns and thoughts and worries and doubts with her. And she said, Matt, maybe you should share some of these things with the students because they just look at you and think you're a rock and you know everything and you never have any worries. You almost don't seem human. And maybe I think if you told them that would be a good thing. I think she was right. So I've had Luke's, at least in the ones that I can show my scars to. I don't have anyone who's writing my legacy so far as I know. If anyone wants to write my biography, there's hopefully a lot more to come and a lot more that will be much more interesting than what has been so far. But I've seen God's goodness in my life. But we come back to what Paul wrote. When he says, follow my example as I follow the example of Jesus. Two last quick questions. Can you say that you follow Jesus? Have you made that decision for yourself? Perhaps you haven't. And if you are interested in doing that, or maybe you say, I don't even really know what that is, but yeah, sure, I'd be interested to know more. I would love to get to chat with you. Afterward, come up, talk to me. And I'd be glad to talk about what that means to follow Jesus. The second question is this. Can you say that your life is an example worth following? And that doesn't mean that you have to be perfect. You will most likely have wounds and scars, just like Paul did. So the example is not that you're perfect, but will you leave an example of being someone who faithfully follows Jesus and one that invests in other people and one that others can do the same?